Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Tuesday, October 15th, 2019. Coming up this hour,
global stocks gain as earnings season kicks off with big U.S. banks.
WeWork leans toward a lifeline from J.P. Morgan over a rescue from SoftBank.
Data from China add to worries about the global economy.
And the pound strengthens as the EU keeps the door open for a Brexit deal.
The U.S. urges an immediate ceasefire in Syria as it sanctions Turkey. Plus, it's debate night for the Democratic presidential candidates. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. Yankees and Astros set to play Game 3 of the ALCS today. Washington went up 3-0 on St. Louis in the NLCS. The Islanders won. The Devils lost.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Interactive Brokers. Premium technology and automation provides clients with lowest cost access to over 125 markets in 31 countries and 22 currencies from a single account. Learn more at ibkr.com/YIB.
And U.S. futures gaining ahead of today's bank earnings, 6:01 on Wall Street. And we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up about 13 points. Dow futures up 113. NASDAQ futures up 38. The DAX in Germany is up 0.5%. CAC in Paris up 0.6%. And the FTSE 100 is down 0.2%. Nikkei 225 in Japan jumped 1.9%. Hang Seng in Hong Kong down less than 0.1%. 10-year Treasury up 11/32nds, yield 1.68%. The yield on the two-year, 1.54%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1.8% or 95 cents at $52.65 a barrel. COMEX gold is little changed, up 90 cents at $14.98.50 an ounce. The euro, 1.1015 against the dollar. The yen, 108.27. Nathan.
Karen, we begin with optimism about that limited trade deal fading as the U.S. and China work to finalize an agreement. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin says talks will continue.
There'll be deputy level calls this week. There'll be principal-level calls next week with Ambassador Lighthizer and myself and the Vice Premier. Those are the things that are planned. I wouldn't be surprised if there's deputy-level meetings in person.
Still, there is optimism among equity investors with U.S. futures and European stocks rebounding today.
And now attention turns to earnings with results from big U.S. banks. J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo all report today. And here with a preview is Shanali Basak.
Analysts are expecting lower revenues for the top six U.S. banks, led by Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. The big investment banks have been hurt by lower deal fees and mixed trading results this year. Bank of America, J.P. Morgan, and Wells Fargo have been benefiting from bigger consumer businesses, but even they are facing pressure from lower interest rates this year, each of them expecting that net interest income will be lower. In New York, I'm Shanali Basak, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Shanali, thanks. BlackRock just came out with its results, posting revenue and earnings per share that both topped estimates. Meanwhile, fixed income net flows at BlackRock came in at $35 billion. That's down 68% from the second quarter.
Meanwhile, earnings at United Health came in above estimates. The company is also raising its forecast for the year. That is, shares of United Health up 1.6% in early trading.
And as we await earnings from J.P. Morgan, J.P. Morgan awaits a decision from WeWork. Right now, the troubled company is leaning toward accepting a lifeline from J.P. Morgan over a rescue by SoftBank. Bloomberg's Tom Busby has the story.
Sources tell us a $5 billion financing package led by J.P. Morgan is WeWork's preferred option instead of selling a controlling stake to SoftBank. That has WeWork's bankers pitching investors on what would be one of the riskiest junk debt offerings in recent years. The financing may include at least $2 billion of unsecured payment-in-kind notes with an unusually high 15% coupon. WeWork expected to make a decision on how to proceed as soon as this week. In New York, I'm Tom Busby, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Tom, thank you. On the economic front, we have data out of China showing factory deflation deepening in September thanks to slowing growth. Details now from Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis in Hong Kong.
Producer prices fell 1.2% from a year earlier. Consumer prices rose 3%, and that was the fastest since 2013 and higher than a Bloomberg estimate. The long and short of this is that consumers are paying more while the industrial sector is getting less. That's making debt repayment much more difficult. Meantime, pork prices surged 69% due to the ravages of African swine fever on hog herds. And that price explosion highlights the need for massive pork imports. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Brian, thank you. Stocks in Asia finished higher today, led by gains in Japan as traders there play catch-up to Monday's gains. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. The TOPIX index gained 1.6%, although BlackRock issued a warning not to go chasing the rally in Japanese equities, saying the 7% gain in the TOPIX since August could just be a temporary move. Stocks in China fell as more disappointing data was released. The CSI 300 closed lower by almost 0.5%. Australian bond yields fell after the RBA's October minute showed board members saw a case for taking rates below 1% for the first time, outweighing the risk posed by its dwindling policy ammunition. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Juliet, thank you. In Europe, the pound is stronger as the EU keeps the door open for a Brexit deal. Chief negotiator Michel Barnier says an agreement is still possible this week.
Even if the agreement will be difficult, more and more difficult, it's still possible this week.
And discussions continue in Brussels today as Britain and the European Union try to agree on how far Northern Ireland will be detached from the EU's customs union. Right now, sterling again higher against the dollar. It's at 1.2648.
On the corporate front, shares of Wirecard are down more than 17% in Frankfurt. That's after a Financial Times report finding questionable accounting practices at the German payments firm. Wirecard denies the allegations.
Volkswagen is delaying its decision on a $1.4 billion auto plant in Turkey. That's due to political upheaval caused by military action in Syria. VW established a Turkey unit earlier this month as part of a move to make cars in the country.
We're seeing signs of progress in talks between General Motors and the United Auto Workers Union. Sources say local union leaders will assemble in Detroit for a meeting on Thursday. It is customary for such a gathering to review any tentative agreement, though we're told no definitive deal has been reached.
And finally, a programming note. Tune in this morning for an exclusive interview with St. Louis Fed President James Bullard. He sits down for a conversation with Bloomberg Radio and Television at 6:30 a.m. Wall Street time. Futures this morning are moving higher. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. 6:07 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr has more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. The Trump administration has slapped sanctions on three high-ranking Turkish officials. It comes as Vice President Mike Pence says he's being dispatched to the Middle East by President Trump as U.S. troops leave northeast Syria. Pence is defending the president after Turkey launched a military operation in Syria.
The United States of America did not give a green light to Turkey to invade Syria. President has been very clear on that point and reiterated that to President Erdogan today.
The Trump administration called for an immediate ceasefire in Syria. Tonight, it's the biggest presidential primary debate in history with 12 Democratic candidates. You can hear it live at 8 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. Bloomberg's Bob Moon reports a recent health scare for Bernie Sanders will put the focus on the frontrunners.
2 weeks to the day after his heart attack, the 78-year-old senator will be looking to show voters he's still a viable presidential choice. And at the University of Missouri, presidential debate scholar Mitchell McKinney says the Sanders question raises others.
Will his supporters begin to look at his candidacy with some skepticism after his recent health concern? If that happens, will they shift to Elizabeth Warren, which seems to be a natural constituency? If that occurs, will that spell some trouble for Joe Biden?
Warren has ascended to a statistical dead heat with Biden in a Quinnipiac survey just out, benefiting from increasingly positive voter perception of her. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Today, Deputy Assistant Secretary of State George Kent is expected to testify before three House committees leading the impeachment inquiry. NBA star LeBron James waded into a controversy over freedom of speech and the business of basketball in China. James says that Houston Rockets GM Daryl Morey was misinformed and not educated on the situation in sending a Twitter post that was supportive of anti-Beijing protesters in Hong Kong.
Understand that what you could tweet or could say, and we all talk about this freedom of speech. Yes, we all do have freedom of speech, but at times there are ramifications for the negative that can happen when you're not thinking about others and you're only thinking about yourself.
Mori's tweet led to the cancellation of some NBA events and sponsorships in China and prompted a blackout of exhibition games by the state broadcaster. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 6:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, nothing like baseball in the Bronx in October. Yankees and Astros start at 4 o'clock today. Game 3 of the ALCS after they split 2 in Houston. Luis Severino on the mound for the Yanks opposite Gerrit Cole, who's never before experienced the postseason at the stadium.
It's going to be exciting. I've pitched here once before, and I had a lot of fun. I always enjoy coming here, and I've heard my teammates' recollection of the atmosphere here, and so it just sounds like, you know, what a great stage and an electric atmosphere and a great place to play some exciting baseball.
All Cole has done over the past nearly 5 months is have a record of 18-0, an ERA of 1.66, 11 consecutive starts with 10 or more strikeouts. So that's what the Yanks are facing today. The NLCS, all Washington up 3-0 after they beat the Cardinals 8-1 in D.C. St. Louis has scored only 2 runs in 3 games, and the Nationals seek the sweep. They can win their first ever pennant tonight. Monday Night Football in Green Bay, the Packers came from behind twice, beat the Lions 23-22 on a last-second field goal. Giants hopeful that Saquon Barkley can return for Sunday's game with Arizona. He's been out the last 3 weeks with a high ankle sprain. The Giants are just 2-4, but they're only a game out of first behind the Eagles and Cowboys. They play each other on Sunday. Nice holiday matinee for the Islanders. They top the defending Stanley Cup champs, beat St. Louis 3-2 in overtime after trailing 2-0 with under 6 minutes to play. But the Devils lost at home to Florida 6-4 after once leading 4-1, and the Devils yet to win in 6 games this season. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
And John, in other sports news, tennis great Roger Federer is going for the gold once again. The 38-year-old says if he stays healthy, he'll play the 2020 Olympics in Tokyo 20 years after his Olympic debut in Sydney. Federer missed the 2016 games in Rio de Janeiro because of injury, but he says he's going to go for it in Tokyo next year. Futures moving higher. This is Bloomberg. Sports was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Let Burden create innovative tax solutions to benefit your family and your business. Visit BurdenLLP.com. Burden Accountants and Advisors. They listen, they solve, they do.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and European stocks rising along with U.S. stock index futures as investors prepare for bank earnings and further developments in the trade dispute between the U.S. and China. The pound is strengthening as the EU's chief negotiator insisted a Brexit accord is possible this week, even though it's getting more and more difficult. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 14 points, Dow futures up 124, NASDAQ futures up 39, the DAX in Germany's up 0.6%. 10-year Treasury up 12/32, yield 1.68%, yield on the 2-year 1.55%. NYMEX crude oil is down 1.8% or 97 cents at $52.62 a barrel. COMEX gold little changed, up 70 cents at $14.98.30 an ounce. The euro 1.1011 against the dollar, British pound 1.2650, and the yen is at 108.29. BlackRock and United Health both reported third quarter profit that beat analyst estimates. JP Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo are all scheduled to report earnings today as well. And finally, a programming note, tune in this morning for an exclusive interview with St. Louis Fed President James Bullard. He sits down for a conversation with Bloomberg Radio and Television at 6:30 a.m. Wall Street time. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, 12 Democrats are taking the stage tonight in the largest ever presidential debate. It will take place in Westerville, Ohio. Professor of Political Communication Mitchell McKinney of the University of Missouri told Bloomberg's David Westin, a primary debate like this has high stakes.
We found very little movement, very little influence of a general election debate. Usually it's 2-3% of leaning or undecided voters may make a decision on that debate, whereas we've seen as high as 30-40% over a span of several weeks of one party's voters make their decision, and they claim they point to debate performances by these candidates in the primary debate.
Bloomberg will bring you the debate live starting at 8 p.m. Wall Street time. In baseball, the Nationals have a commanding 3-0 lead over the Cardinals in the NLCS. Washington beat St. Louis 8-1 in Game 3. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It's coming up to 6:20 on Wall Street and live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Want to pass along this red headline that just crossed the Bloomberg terminal. Sources tell Bloomberg China will struggle to buy $50 billion of U.S. farm goods a year unless the U.S. removes retaliatory tariffs on American products, a move it would only take if President Trump reciprocates and rolls back levies that have been put in place since the trade war began. We'll continue to watch U.S. equity futures on that news. Right now, little change in the action there with S&P futures higher by about 0.4% as we await the flood of big bank earnings. With the earnings reporting season now underway, we welcome Shanali Bosak, finance reporter for Bloomberg News. It's going to be a very busy morning for you, Shanali, in just a few minutes here when J.P. Morgan reports. It's going to be really fascinating to see how the financials hold up in this low interest rate environment.
Oh, certainly. I don't think I've ever been so excited about net interest income. Have you?
No kidding. So what are you expecting, particularly from J.P. Morgan, as it navigates this uncertain policy path from the Fed?
Exactly. So J.P. Morgan has already guided that their net interest income would be lower for the year. But the last time we really heard about their guidance was in the last quarter. And obviously, the rate outlook has worsened since then. And so since more than 40% of J.P. Morgan's income comes from consumer banking and the consumer has been really what's been propping up these banks this year, it's going to be really interesting to see what their outlook is and if it has changed at all.
Yeah, particularly when you see that, you know, trading desks have been pulling back some of their staffing. When you talk about the consumer propping up the banks, you know, can trading in equities and some of the more volatile sectors of the market continue to give these banks a profitable path?
That's a good question also, especially for J.P. Morgan. Their equities desk is really competing with number one Morgan Stanley. This is going to really be a make or break quarter in terms of watching whether people are gaining market share. J.P. Morgan just took on a lot of business that used to be held by Deutsche Bank as well. And so they've been really ramping up their business with hedge funds and the equities business in particular, as well as pouring billions of dollars into electronic capabilities.
And what about cost cutting? That's been a pretty big part of the story for banks as well. What are you looking for there?
That's for sure. So we're going to see Citigroup reports a little later today. They're the ones that really people wanted to see keep a lid on expenses. JP Morgan, people care about expenses, but their return on tangible equity, which is really a return metric people look at, it's through the roof. They really deliver, and people are going to want to keep seeing that. And while they invest in a large branch network that they're only growing.
Recent market volatility, could that be something that the banks have been able to take advantage of in some way?
It is. So market volatility is either a good thing or a bad thing. It's a good thing if hedge funds are trading more and people are looking for opportunities to capitalize on the markets. But if it stifles activity, which sometimes it does, and it did toward the end of the third quarter, that becomes a very bad thing, and hedge funds stop borrowing, institutional clients stop borrowing. I don't know if you saw BlackRock's results earlier this morning, but they reported some outflows in fixed income trading. That's not a great indicator. But let's see after the third quarter whether this market volatility really brought people back into the markets or scared them away.
And when you talk about Wells Fargo, there's been so much uncertainty, particularly in the leadership of that bank. Do you expect to see many changes from the new CEO, Charlie Scharf?
I think people want to see new changes from Charlie Scharf. So Visa's share price while he was leading it doubled. And so people have already been asking Scharf, what is his plan for growth over the next 5 years, let alone all the problems they have to fix with the Fed and other regulators. And so Scharf has said immediately that the first thing he has to focus on is fixing their position with regulators. That will take some time, but people are already looking for the next phase, even after the cleanup story.
All right, Bloomberg's finance reporter, Shanali Bosick, looking forward to your coverage. It's going to get started in just a few minutes here. We expect J.P. Morgan to report its results later this hour, followed by Goldman Sachs in the 7 o'clock hour, and we're expecting results from Citigroup and Wells Fargo right around 8 a.m. Wall Street time. As I say, very busy morning for everyone covering the financial sector on Wall Street. And again, the red headline just crossed the Bloomberg terminal moments ago on the U.S.-China trade story. Sources say China will struggle to buy $50 billion of U.S. farm goods unless it removes retaliatory tariffs on U.S. products, but says it won't do that unless President Trump reciprocates. Futures still higher. This is Bloomberg. And Daybreak was brought to you by the new Range Rover Evoque, designed to open your eyes to the possibilities of what's right in your own neighborhood. Visit your tri-state area Land Rover retailer for the new Range Rover Evoque. Land Rover, above and beyond.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York.
Bloomberg 1130
to Washington, D.C.
Bloomberg 991
to Boston.
Bloomberg 1061
to San Francisco.
Bloomberg 960
to the country.
Sirius XM Channel 119
and around the globe.
The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading, and right now S&P futures are higher, up 7 points. Dow futures up 64, and NASDAQ futures up 21. The DAX in Germany is up 0.4%, CAC in Paris up 0.5%, and the FTSE 100 is down 0.4%. Nikkei 225 in Japan jumped 1.9%, and the Hang Seng in Hong Kong was down less than 0.1%. 10-year Treasury up 15.30 seconds. Nathan.
All right, Karen, thank you. Now we turn to the Fed and an exclusive interview with St. Louis President James Bullard. Fed funds futures currently show about a 70% chance the central bank cuts rates this month. Let's see where Mr. Bullard stands now. He is in London today to speak with Bloomberg's Tom Keene and Francine Lacroix. Let's listen in now.
And now we welcome all of you worldwide and coast to coast, an important conversation on economics. No, not on the Nobel Prize winners, maybe on negative interest rates, but much more on the future of American monetary economics. He is James Bullard. He is a St. Louis Fed president, and we're thrilled that he joins us at Bloomberg in London today, our 2019 Monetary and Financial Policy Conference. President Bullard, wonderful to speak to you again. Jim, I'll cut right to the chase. You changed the economic dialogue a number of years ago with the request that we find regime change. Are we at that moment right now where there's literally a regime change in our economics where the Fed has to shift the way it does business?
Well, I think for Europe, the ECB is facing a difficult situation. So you might look at that as a crossroads, to so to speak, of monetary policy. For the U.S., I think we're generally speaking in good shape. I have emphasized that we face some downside risks from the trade war, and I've tried to encourage the committee to take action, which we have. To try to mitigate those risks and keep us on an even keel in the U.S.
What is the urgency of the next number of meetings? We see some houses saying one and done, and I don't want you to game the Fed. I know that's not part of the dialogue. But are we too focused on the one next meeting, October 30, versus the what-ifs of December 11 and into 2020?
I think we'll go on a meeting-by-meeting basis here. The committee has taken two moves, and if you look at my remarks this morning, I think we've moved a lot in the last year. If we were sitting here a year ago, we would have been talking about the Fed raising rates in 2019, not lowering rates. And instead, during January, February, we said we were taking the interest rate hikes off the table, and then getting into June, July, August, September, we started talking about reducing rates. So the shift in monetary policy in the U.S. has been quite dramatic over the last year. I'd say 125, 135 basis points, not just the 50 basis points that we've had. So one part of what we need to do is take stock of where we are, but I think also we have to consider additional insurance in the meetings ahead.
So should the Fed be more aggressive given the risks to the economy?
Well, I mean, if you if you buy the argument that I just made, we have been pretty aggressive. And normally you would think with long and variable lags in policy that it would take a while for those things to have an impact on actual hard data in the U.S. I would expect those kinds of effects to come online during the second half of 2019, the first half of 2020. And you are seeing some of that in housing markets, for instance, where, say, refinancing activity and other things have picked up.
But you dissented in favor of a half a point cut instead of the quarter point cut. Do you still think next time around that we need half a point cut?
Generally speaking, I'd like to do more, but I don't want to prejudge the meeting. It's let's get to the meeting and make a decision there.
Jim Bullard, our Michael McKee enjoys being in the press conference, and the long and variable lag is when he asks a question of Chairman Powell, and he really doesn't get a chairman-like answer. So we're going to try you right now. What is the efficacy of have some coffee there. The coffee's better in London, by the way, in St. Louis or New York.
It's a palace over here, Tom.
Yeah, you should welcome.
You should move over here.
It's been considered as well. We can't fly vet bill over there. We welcome all on Bloomberg Radio and Bloomberg Television to this conversation with Jim Bullard. Jim, seriously, Michael McKee has asked and asked and asked the simple question, what is the efficacy of rate cuts with an economy that's doing pretty well or pretty darn good, or as Vice Chairman Clarida says, solid? What is the good that we can get out of these rate cuts?
Well, these always have impacts on the margin. That's the way monetary policy works. And I would say to those that say the U.S. economy is doing pretty well, I would agree in the sense that consumption looks pretty strong and labor markets look very good in the U.S. But those are lagging indicators. You'd be looking backward if that's all you looked at. You have to look forward and think about the risks that might lie ahead. And I think financial markets are a great place to look at what might happen going forward. And that's why I've tried to bring some financial signals to greater prominence in monetary policy discussions, like the slope of the yield curve.
Jim Bullard, let me get some indie academics out of this. We talked to Michael Spence in the last hour, the laureate from Stanford and New York University. Can monetary policy assuage a trade war? Can you guys fix the pain and the agony of a trade war?
Well, I got this question a little earlier today also, but obviously we can't do anything directly about trade, but we do have our mandate to maintain high employment and low inflation, and we're trying to do the best we can to take on board what's going on with the trade war and other risks to the global economy and to the U.S. economy, and conduct a monetary policy that will help us meet our objectives as best we can. And frankly, we've been meeting, we certainly have a great labor market, but the inflation side has been somewhat weak. We've been below target. Inflation expectations remain below target. I'd like to recenter inflation and inflation expectations back at our 2% target. Mm-hmm. I think that would be a great outcome.
What's your read on global growth and trade negotiations? Are things getting better or are they getting worse?
What we're seeing is day-to-day, tit-for-tat, which is a normal part of any negotiating situation. That's what the game theory tells you is going to happen. We can't, as policymakers, be reacting day-to-day because that would just create even more uncertainty around trade and around monetary policy. So I think what we can do is take on board the idea that the 50-year or 75-year consensus about the U.S. pushing toward more and more trade liberalization has broken down, and that we have more trade uncertainty, and businesses are going to have to take that uncertainty on board, and they're going to have to devise business strategies that cope with the high degree of uncertainty that exists in this arena.
James Bullard, I know you don't want to talk too much about the next meeting, but according to the minutes of the last meeting, the FOMC is, of course, discussing when it should end its insurance rate cuts. Could it mean that we should be looking for a change in language to indicate after this meeting that the bar is actually higher for extra cuts?
Well, I'd leave that to the chair. That's what he gets paid the big bucks to do. We'll see where the committee comes down on that. I think we obviously do use language changes and have in the past, but whether anything would be brewing on that, I don't know.
Again, on Bloomberg Radio and Bloomberg Television, a conversation with Jim Bullard. Many on radio, you know what the dots look like. Let's bring it up right now. Dots go. It's sort of an ugly chart. McKee loves this. He's got it on his kitchen wall. Jim Bullard, Dakota Hudson doesn't have a dot on here. He'll be starting for St. Louis tonight. Where's the Bullard dot? And are we done with the dots? Are we going to move on from the dot?
We've talked before. I'm not really a fan of this dot plot, but we're stuck with it, I guess. I think we're trying to give the best indication we can of what we think might happen over the forecast horizon. I don't think the dot plot probably reflects the true degree of uncertainty that exists there. I've put, my ideal scenario is that we do this insurance now, but that the economy actually grows pretty well and labor markets continue to be strong in 2020 and maybe 2021, and then we're able to actually take these rate cuts back at some point in the future. That's what happened during the 1990s. And so if I'm just putting out my base scenario, then that's what I'd say. I hope that's what happens. But on the other hand, I want to lower now because I think we want to take out insurance against these risks and the idea that the trade war might morph into something more serious for the U.S. economy.
Jim Bullard, in every conversation I have, from the youngest market economist out to the new managing director of the IMF, people are talking about confidence, about the will to move forward into 2020. What is the state of business confidence in the St. Louis district?
Certainly for agriculture and manufacturing especially, and some other businesses as well, they express a lot of angst about trade issues. And I get a lot of stories, detailed stories, about how it affects particular markets. So I think that's a major concern. Overall business conditions, however, especially for domestic-facing businesses, remain good. And they're cautiously optimistic going forward. But they are concerned about that policy, the trade policy issue.
This is a very tough.
The Department of Defense and the Ministry of Energy.
Senator Lindsey Graham says this won't be enough, and there'll be more.
We're going to send a signal to Turkey that's unmistakable in the eyes of Erdogan and the world, and we're going to break his economy until he stops the bloodshed.
Democrats say it is too late to prevent a major bloodbath and the release of large numbers of Islamic State terrorists. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Democratic presidential candidates head to Ohio tonight for their fourth debate. 12 candidates will be on the stage in Westerville. Bloomberg will bring you the debate live starting at 8 p.m. Wall Street time. University of Missouri professor of political communication Mitchell McKinney spoke with Bloomberg.
Primary debates really are important, can be important moments for these candidates in persuading voters.
Looming over tonight's debate, the battle over impeachment and Democrats escalating their attacks on President Trump after he asked both Ukraine and China to investigate Joe Biden and his son Hunter, who had business dealings there while his father was vice president. Meanwhile, Hunter Biden admitted to ABC he didn't see how his business relationships could be seen by others, particularly President Trump.
Where's the mistake? The mistake is in the fact that, by perception, I gave a hook to some very unethical people to act in illegal ways to try to do some harm to my father. That's where I made the mistake.
Hong Kong subway system has closed early for more than a week. Bloomberg's Brian Curtis is in Hong Kong.
The early shutdown is effectively cutting off transport from millions of residents and serving like a curfew. Many are wondering how long it will last. The rail operator MTR Corp is shutting early to repair its stations racked by violence. The MTR's majority shareholder is the government. The violence is getting worse, big events are getting canceled, and the economy is slipping toward recession. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
In baseball, the Nationals have a commanding 3-0 lead over the Cardinals in the NLCS. Washington beat St. Louis 8-1 in Game 3. In the NHL, the Islanders won in overtime against the Blues. The Devils lost along with the Capitals. The Bruins were winners. Monday Night Football, the Packers beat the Lions in a last-second field goal.
23-22.
I know.
Global News, 24 hours a day on air, and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Bard. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael. Thank you for that. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, where it is 6:49 on Wall Street, and it's time now to check on what's going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include differing views on former Russia advisor Fiona Hill's testimony in the impeachment investigation, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg responding to critics after reports he met with conservative journalists and lawmakers, and 12 Democratic candidates preparing for the largest presidential debate ever to be held on one stage. You can hear it live tonight on Bloomberg Radio. Also making news this morning, Trump administration calling for an immediate ceasefire in Syria as it hits Turkey with some sanctions. For more on this, we're joined by Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter. And from the looks of it, Kate, it sounds like the sanctions, as they've been announced so far, don't seem to have impressed much of anyone in Washington outside perhaps the White House.
I think that's right. And I don't think, in some ways, I don't think that's a surprise, given what we've seen over the last few days from Trump and the White House. There's been kind of a whiplash on its Syria policy. But I think that essentially these sanctions are much milder than what certainly some Republicans and a lot of Democrats were looking for. I think there's a growing sense that there could be a humanitarian crisis about to unfold in Syria, another humanitarian crisis. And I think there's a sense that the U.S. should be pushing back harder than it is. And so I would expect that debate to play out as Congress returns this week.
Yeah. Do you expect that debate to happen quickly, given how quickly the situation in northern Syria has developed?
Well, certainly, I think there's a lot of energy behind, the idea that Congress could act quickly. But I think people were holding off to see what the White House would do, because obviously the types of sanctions that the U.S. can take unilaterally happen the quickest from the Treasury Department, and the Treasury Department has some latitude to do that. However, I think now that there's disappointment in what has been the steps that have been taken so far, that could put more of the onus on Congress to act. But as we know, Congress moves very slowly. And so I wouldn't expect them to move like today or tomorrow, certainly.
What are you watching for in terms of Republican support for the president, given how fierce the blowback has been on the foreign policy front when there's an impeachment inquiry underway?
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, Trump is really kind of getting, he's getting a barrage of criticism on a couple different fronts, namely, obviously, Syria and impeachment. And so I think in some ways, you know, he's been a very resilient president, particularly among his base. His support has been very, very resilient. However, I think, the fact that we've seen such widespread Republican lawmaker criticism of his policies and his actions over the last several days in Syria, I think that is coming at an inopportune time, to put it lightly, given what's going on with impeachment. These are the same lawmakers who he's going to need to stick by him if he's going to weather this impeachment inquiry. And, you know, the actions that he's taken in Syria have drawn a lot of criticism, obviously, from those same types of folks. And so certainly the timing is not good, and it could end up being, you know, really problematic for the president.
In the time we have left, a big debate coming up with a big number of candidates and a lot of vulnerabilities for the top tier.
Absolutely. So, you know, we have Joe Biden, who obviously has had the position of the front runner, but, you know, Elizabeth Warren's nipping at his heels. She's been statistically tied in a number of polls. She's on the verge potentially of taking the lead. And so this is the first debate since this whole issue with Ukraine, and Joe Biden's son Hunter has come up. So it's going to be very interesting to see how the candidates handle that and how Biden's able to withstand that in this coming debate, and, you know, whether that or other issues knock him off of his perch as the front runner.
Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter. Have to leave it there for now, but a reminder, you can listen to the fourth Democratic presidential debate live from Westerville, Ohio, beginning at 8 p.m. Wall Street time, right here on Bloomberg Radio. At 6:53 in the morning on Wall Street, we're watching earnings from J.P. Morgan cross the Bloomberg terminal. Want to get some insights and analysis now from Bloomberg's senior financial services analyst, of Allison Williams of Bloomberg Intelligence. And just taking a look at some of the headlines crossing this morning, looks like a pretty significant beat, Allison, on FICC sales and trading.
So it does. It looks like FICC better, equities light. That's not too surprising, just given the fact that September was such a strong month for credit issuance and credit trading. So perhaps that may have been where the surprise was. We don't know yet if there's any kind of one-timers in there. I think the most impressive thing to me, 18% return on tangible equity. So that's very strong. We haven't looked yet to see what's happening with the guidance, but it looks like credit solid. And let's see, just scrolling down now to see what the guidance is, because I think that's going to be the key thing.
Well, while we look for those headlines to cross, what will you be looking for particularly from the guidance and when CEO Jamie Dimon speaks later today?
So from the guidance, we're going to be looking at basically costs. And if there's any change to net interest income guidance, it looks like that guidance is pretty stable to what they gave for last quarter. It does look like the expense guidance is a little bit lower, so that's a positive, credit in line. From Jamie, we're going to be wanting to hear about any comments on the environment, any comments on the political landscape. We're going to want to hear about sort of the broader relationship with WeWork. And we'll be looking to dig in a little bit more in terms of where they're gaining share, what's happening with loan growth, and what's happening with pricing on those loans as well as deposits.
All right, Allison, thank you for this. That's Bloomberg Intelligence Senior Financial Services Analyst Allison Williams. As J.P. Morgan results come down, we're going to have much more analysis, not just on their third quarter earnings, but Goldman Sachs reports next hour, as well as Citigroup and Wells Fargo. The flood of bank earnings just beginning, and Allison's going to have much more coming up on Bloomberg Surveillance with Tom Keene and Jonathan Farrow. Karen.
All right, Nathan, it looks like investors like what they see from J.P. Morgan Chase. Shares are up 1.3% right now in early trading. They like what they see, at least initially. Anyway, we'll be watching those shares as well. S&P futures are higher, up 9 points. Dow futures up 95. NASDAQ futures up 22. The DAX in Germany is up 0.4%. 10-year Treasury up 14/32nds, yield 1.68%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.53%. And NYMEX crude oil is down 1.25% or 66 cents at $52.93. Cents a barrel. And it's currently 6:56 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
I'm Brian Chapata, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. It has been tough to keep up with the play-by-play of Puerto Rico's unprecedented bankruptcy. On September 27th, the federal board overseeing the island's finances took what appeared to be a crucial step by releasing a restructuring plan that laid out how much bondholders and retirees stood to lose. In an ordinary bankruptcy, it would now be a question of whether pensioners and creditors agree to the terms and what tweaks might be needed to get to the finish line. But this is Puerto Rico. This week could wind up dealing a setback to the foundation of the restructuring process. The U.S. Supreme Court will hear oral arguments that challenge the constitutionality of the Federal Oversight Board. In one possible unlikely scenario, the court could invalidate all the progress made by the board to date. Even if that doesn't happen, there's the restructuring plan itself. Bondholders don't like it, and neither do pensioners. Puerto Rico's bankruptcy has always been messy, but years later, the Commonwealth doesn't seem anywhere close to the end of this unfortunate chapter. I'm Brian Chapata. For more opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And Bloomberg Opinion editorials can be heard every weekday at this time, and terminal customers can read more at OPIN Go. And we continue to watch shares of J.P. Morgan Chase in the early trade, up 0.7%. Now they've backed off a bit. S&P futures higher, up 11 points right now. Bloomberg Surveillance is straight ahead with Tom Keene and Jonathan Farrow. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.